KALW.
In the old time, salmon want to come back to their rivers. They want to be upstream. They want to do the things they're supposed to be doing.
An endangered species of salmon is finally getting help after 80 years.
When I see gravel like this and how clean it is, it really makes me excited and happy.
Today, the fight of the Winnemem Wintu people to return salmon to their homelands. Then a fire at an encampment in West Oakland brought firefighters to the scene for the 90th time in a year.
I was very surprised. I mean, I've seen Skid Row, you know, vacationing in L.A., but even coming here, I was definitely surprised to see the number of unhoused residents we have.
And we'll hear a reading from a San Bruno author. New arrivals and more. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This week, an endangered Chinook salmon species is getting help thanks to federal and state agencies and a small native California tribe. This comes 80 years after construction of the Shasta Dam flooded out the area's indigenous people and blocked their salmon from swimming upstream. For the past 5 years, KALW's The Spiritual Edge has been following the fight of the Winnemem Wintu people to return salmon to their homelands. Reporter Judy Silber gives us a preview of her upcoming audio documentary series, A Prayer for Salmon.
Chief Colleen Sisk says she and her people, the Winnemem Wintu, are following a prayer to bring salmon back to their homelands on a river above Shasta Dam.
Overall, there was a prayer that came down from Mount Shasta, Buyum Puyuk, about the Landara Nur, which means the old-time salmon. And the old-time salmon want to come back to their rivers. They want to be upstream. They want to do the things they're supposed to be doing.
To support the prayer and draw attention to their cause, the Winnemem Wintu started an annual ceremony called the Run for Salmon. Over several weeks, a small but dedicated group of Winnemem Wintu and allies walk, bike, and kayak along the salmon's historical migration path from the northern reaches of California all the way to the San Francisco Bay. When it started back in 2016, they hoped the run would raise awareness about the plight of salmon and California's waterways.
Hopefully, you know, we wake up enough people in the state of California and out from there that people will start talking about it and know that it's the right thing to do. It needs to be done.
Beyond the run for salmon, Chief Sisk has fought hard to have her voice heard. She showed up at public meetings whenever she can. But the Winnemem Wintu are not officially recognized by the federal government. And so for years, she wasn't allowed on official salmon committees. Meanwhile, the situation grew worse for Chinook salmon, especially a species known as the winter run. Blocked by Shasta Dam, the winter run salmon are forced to spawn in waters that can be quite warm, especially during drought.
So I can't emphasize enough, though, how precarious the situation for winter run Chinook is.
Jonathan Ambrose is a biologist with the National Marine Fisheries Service. He says it's imperative to return winter run to colder waters above Shasta Dam. Ambrose crouches on a small gravel bed off the McLeod River. The McLeod is one of four main tributaries that feeds into Shasta Dam.
When I see gravel like this and how clean it is, it really makes me excited and happy. Thinking about winter run Chinook back in this watershed.
The Winnemem Wintu fished this river until Shasta Dam flooded them off their land. It's cold, fed by glacial waters, and relatively unscathed by human development. Ambrose says it escaped the gold mining frenzy of the 1850s.
So because there was no gold, the river wasn't destroyed, like we see in the Sierras with the hydraulic mining. When I first saw this river, I thought, how can this not work? Let's just get the fish up here and see what happens.
Planning for a pilot project began in 2010. The idea was to place winter run eggs from a conservation hatchery into the McLeod. Once the eggs hatch, juvenile fish would be caught, loaded up in trucks, driven below the dam, and released to swim out to the ocean. Upon their return a few years later, either they or their eggs would be trucked the other way around. It's an imperfect solution, but at least it gets the salmon above Shasta Dam. The agency had intended to plant the first eggs in 2023, but then successive years of drought threatened to push the winter run to extinction. Kathy Marcinkiewicz is also with the Fisheries Service. She remembers the panic they felt earlier this year.
Kind of early on in the season, but it was the driest January, February, March we had had on record. We were going into March. We didn't know what April would bring.
The project was accelerated. And to the Winnemem Wintus' surprise, they were asked to be co-managers. Last week, a truck carrying a small orange cooler with 20,000 winter run eggs made its way to a remote McLeod River campground down a bumpy and steep dirt road. The original plan was to helicopter the eggs in, but then the government decided that was overkill. The Winnemem disagreed. It got tense. Even so, two young women from the tribe lift the cooler and carry it around a sacred fire.
And the intent was to have the sacred bless those eggs.
The ceremony takes place as part of this year's Run for Salmon. Participants and government officials watch as Chief Sisk and Winnemem Wintu children walk a steep path down to the river. With small cups, the children carefully deposit eggs into a large blue barrel, an incubator fed by cool McLeod water. Here, the eggs will mature until juvenile salmon hatch and swim out into the river. The transfer marks a special moment.
We're showing the traditions of these salmon coming back. You see these little people in regalia? They're 5 years old. They have a long way to go with these salmon. And it's going to continue, so you need to deal with us.
This land is owned by the Forest Service now, but was once the site of a Winnemem Wintu village. It's where Chief Sisk's great-grandmother lived. Now they're holding ceremony here for the first time in more than 80 years. Young Winnemem are seeing salmon eggs with their own eyes. Chief Sisk says if the salmon can come back, maybe the tribe can bounce back as well. Along the McLeod River in Northern California, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.
That story is part of an upcoming audio documentary series by KLW's The Spiritual Edge. It's called A Prayer for Salmon. You can find more information at klw.org or thespiritualedge.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Last week, a propane fire roared through an encampment of unhoused residents on Oakland's west side at 34th and Wood Streets. Firefighters have responded to the same site at least 90 times between March of 2021 and this past March. Caltrans and the city of Oakland were planning to clear out the encampment and evict the residents, but a restraining order was issued to block them. And that means the fire remains a recurring threat to the Wood Street encampment and others elsewhere. KALW's Sunni Khalid recently spoke with Oakland Fire Department Chief Reginald Freeman, who's held the job for more than a year. They talked about last week's blaze and about the challenges facing both unhoused people and firefighters in dealing with the ever-present threat of fire.
I guess you've had to hit the ground running, right?
Yeah, it's been very an enlightening experience. Definitely truly honored and privileged to be able to serve the members of the Oakland Fire Department as well as our great residents.
Okay, well, I wanted to ask you, number one, about the fire that took place earlier this week on Wood and 34th Streets at a homeless encampment. What actually happened
So we responded to 34th and Wood Street at approximately 10:20 a.m. for reports of a fire. Upon our personnel's arrival on scene, there was heavy fire, heavy smoke showing. At approximately 10:40 a.m., the incident commander called for a second alarm, as well as mutual aid from Alameda County Fire Department, as well as the City of Alameda Fire Department. We had approximately 60 firefighters on location to mitigate the incident. We do not know exactly how the fire started. The fire was investigated, but the fire investigator could not come to any conclusion as to what started the fire. We're working with state agencies as well as department agencies for clearing out the site, specifically the railroad trestle that was involved in fire.
Okay. You've been on the job for about a year. I've been on the job for about a year, and we keep getting reports, fires at various homeless encampments across the Bay Area, especially in the East Bay. Has that been one of your most pressing challenges since you assumed your job?
It poses challenges to our firefighters. Literally, it is a danger to their life and their safety because of the exploding pressurized cylinders and the other dangers that are involved with some of our encampment fires. You know, we have a number of hazards here in the city of Oakland. Our wild and urban interface is significantly problematic for us. We've had a number of fires at encampments for our unhoused, for sure.
Now, you've been talking about the propane cylinders. What are they used for, and what sort of danger do they pose not only to those who use them, but to the firefighters as well?
In our experience, and from talking to our residents who are at these encampments, they are used for heating purposes as well as cooking. And that's where we see some of our fires start, is from propane cylinders or even open flame, just people starting fires for whatever reason, whether it be to try to stay warm or to cook, whether it be with propane cylinders or something else. That's the majority of how those incidents start. So we obviously try to engage all of our residents at our encampments in regards to public education materials so they can keep themselves and their neighbors safe.
When I talked to your spokesperson, Michael Hunt, he told me that at that particular encampment that the Oakland Fire Department had responded 90 times between March of last year and March of this year. That seems like a really amazing figure. Why so many fires at this encampment?
Just for what we've already discussed, we have folks that are accidentally starting these fires. And with the number of unhoused that are at this particular encampment and the combustible materials that are on location and just the fire threat period, because of open flames, you're going to have significant fires. So yes, we have gone there pretty often within the last year, let alone a few years.
Is that particular encampment at 34th and Wood, is that an exception to the rule? 90 fires within a year. Do you have other encampments that you have just as many fires or less? Is that an outlier?
No, I mean, there's a lot of fires out there. There's a lot of people there. So when you have a lot of people, again, with the conditions that are presented at Wood Street, you're going to have fire incidents. So it's something that we, as the fire department, we respond and provide services when called upon. That's our oath of office. But I don't really think that people realize the number of people that are on location. We're not talking 20 people. So when you have these homes that are fabricated and you have open flames, there's going to be fire incidents.
I had read the account of a previous fire, I guess about a month or 2 months ago. And because of the location of this encampment, your men and women had to go like 300 yards or something like that to a fire hydrant. The location of these encampments, what challenges do they pose to your firefighters?
Yeah, it's not designed for people to be living there, right? So there is no water supply with hydrants. because of the RVs, the debris, the trash, the material that's piled up, the fabricated homes. Sometimes it's very difficult for us to get to what we call a seat of the fire to mitigate the emergency. But yeah, it's even for the last Wood Street fire, when I was on location for the entire incident, we had to lay hundreds of feet of supply line just so we could have adequate water supply and set up a master stream. And that was with the city of Alameda's fire engine. But yeah, significant challenges throughout the encampments pertaining to access, pertaining to water supply, and then just the general danger of what's burning there, period.
Now, Chief, you come from the East Coast. Were you surprised at, the degree of homelessness or the size of the encampments when you first arrived here on the job?
I was very surprised. I mean, I've seen Skid Row, you know, vacationing in L.A. That is something that I'll never forget. But even coming here, I was definitely surprised.
You know, you've spoken with some of the residents in these encampments. What do they tell you, and what can you do? What can the community do to reduce or prevent some of these for similar fires from taking place in the future?
Don't have open flames. Do not use propane cylinders to heat your homes or where you're living. And at the most, what we do is make sure that we make ourselves readily available to provide public education material to all residents in the city, whether it be housed or unhoused, and be as supportive as we can. We try to connect folks with different services that might be a benefit to them, to connect them with folks in health and human services, whether it be veteran affairs or women's groups that can help depending on the individual circumstance. So we try to be that mediator to try to get people the help that they need. But our message is do not have open flames, which again, that's just like asking people not to litter, right? But you see litter all over the room. People have to live. They have to live, and they're doing the best they can with what they have, and we can understand and respect that.
Last question, your interactions with some of the residents, what are you able to exchange with each other in these conversations?
I mean, there's a lot of conversations, right, on every end of the spectrum. So a lot of people want to be able to live in peace. A lot of people want help. Some people don't want any help. They want to be, quote unquote, left alone. A lot of people want to be understood. A lot of people want empathy. A lot of people just want an opportunity to have a good quality of life. And those are what the conversations revolve around. And that's where us assisting where we can, getting people connected with folks that can be of assistance or help to them. That's where that comes into play.
That was Oakland Fire Department Chief Reginald Freeman speaking with KLW's Sunni Khalid. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we'll explore the experience of desire as told by a Sam Bruno author. It's another episode of KLW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Kathleen J. Woods lives in San Bruno. Her book, White Wedding, came out on February 2nd, 2022.
Its framing narrative follows a woman who has crashed a wedding after hitchhiking with a girl named Charlotte, and the narratives within are various stories that explore sex and desire. This is one of my favorite passages. The woman had not expected Charlotte. In the hours before they met, she had been walking further down the mountain. away from the mansion and other messes that opened and entered her skin. The sky had been black, tinted navy. She walked slow and alone through the night. She passed through hot, quiet streets, past houses on private acres, fences run through with poison ivy and blackberry, chain link warping to forest. A chill seeped through the redwoods. Damp bark and damp ferns, deer and asphalt, oil slicks and oil glands and nerves. She reached the throat of a two-lane highway and a dark gas station and squatted on a pump's concrete base, her knees spread toward the empty highway, her skirt crumpled to the crease of her hips. There was still some time before dawn.
That was Kathleen J. Woods reading from White Wedding.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can hear more authors reading from their new books at kelw.org/newarrivals. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll meet an artist connecting his neighbors through his crocheted creations.
Sometimes I look outside and people are just looking at them and like taking pictures, and it makes us feel really good because it makes everyone feel really happy. I called this one Pumpkin and I call that one Chompy. Chompy's Pumpkin's older sister.
The Science of Happiness and Helping, tomorrow at 5. Before we leave you, here's some new music from a local band. This is Oakland-based band Skip the Needle. They're performing at the Women in Audio Missions performance series Local Sirens, featuring women in music. That's at the Parks at 5 p.m. in San Francisco's SoMa District tomorrow night.
Time has come to take a stand. It's out of hand. We're taking charge of our lives. Not gonna go away, not this time. Gonna take our time until we change the system. Cops are killing babies, can't you see? Everybody sees and it's an outrage. So let's get involved, it affects us all. And let's right these wrongs, yeah.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Hanisha Herjani, Lucen Mendel, Raphael Cohen, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Shia Lovett, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Folks angry.